This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is the Get Booked Podcast, a weekly show for personalized reading recommendations. This is episode 219, and we are recording on February 18th. I'm Jen Northington. I'm here with Amanda Nelson, and we are coming to you from Book Riot, and I am literally here with Amanda Nelson. I am, the call is coming from inside the house.
Can you tell that she's in my guest room? She's one floor below me.
Yes. So, yeah, it's very exciting. Although we still have to, like, pretend like we're not, I mean, we're not in the same room. It's still weird, but that's okay. It's fun. It's fun. So welcome to the show. It's going to be interesting. We'll see how this goes. If this is the first time you are tuning in, this is a show for personalized reading recommendations, which means you send in questions about what you should read next, what your book club should read, what you should get for a friend or a relative, any and all of those things, and tell us what you like, and we will do our best to find you your next great read. You can send those in either via the form that's at the bottom of the show notes on the site for every episode, or you can send them through email. It's getbooked@bookriot.com. And if you have a time-sensitive request, please do make sure to put time-sensitive either in the subject line of the email or the very first line of the form. Let us know when you're hoping to hear back by. We will do our best. If we're not going to get to it on the air, we might email you, so keep an eye out for those. Oh, and we have another insider fast-track question today, which, if you didn't know, if you sign up for our exclusive membership program, Book Riot Insiders, you can get your question fast-tracked. So that's insiders.bookriot.com. Check it out. And this is from Heather, who says, last year I read all the Tamara Pierce books and I loved them. And I'm currently reading Novus Dragoneer and also enjoying it. Can you recommend me a good comp for Tamara Pierce? I've listened to all the Get Booked episodes, so something that's never been recommended would be awesome. Also, bonus points for a series or multiple books I read through the Tamara books so fast. All right, so first we will do a sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have seven great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and Oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
And now we will talk about Tamara Pierce Combs. Amanda.
I'm going to talk about Graceling because we've somehow never talked about Graceling on this show before in the years that we've been doing it. How is that possible? I don't believe it.
I don't know.
I believe it because you keep meticulous records of every book that we talk about on this show. But I was still like, how? Probably because people call us asking for recommendations for Graceling comps as opposed to the other one. So anyway, Graceling is what I'm recommending to you by Kristen Cashore. I almost feel like I don't even have to explain what it is, but I will. So this came out in 2008. And I feel like it was, you know, hot on the heels of like the Hunger Games when we were deep in YA land about like strong female assassins, which is a thing that I super love and feels very Tamora Pierce adjacent because she writes a lot about like very physical female characters who go out and like have adventures and do the thing. So Graceling is about a girl named Katsa who in this universe, when you're born with two different colored eyes, it means that you have some kind of like supernatural gift. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be supernatural, but like it can be anything. It can be like you can hold your breath forever. Something like totally useless. Or it can be like Katsa's gift, which is to kill people with a touch. Like she's just a really good combatant and soldier and assassin. And so this is the thing that she's graced with. And she has been taken by the king of this universe, who is also her uncle, to be his like personal assassin. And she hates it. She hates it. And the older she gets, the more she hates it. And the more she struggles with like the ethics of it. And she doesn't know how to get out of it because like, how do you get out of that when that's what your whole, you know, kingdom and governance is built around? She doesn't know how to escape. And then she meets a very like kind-hearted normal named Poe. He's like a prince from a neighboring kingdom. He turns out to not be like a total normal. He is also graced. And then the two of them discover some like political secrets. There's a lot of adventuring, and, you know, death-defying daring do. But it's like very proto-feminist. Not proto-feminist in as much as like the feminism isn't evolved, but in as much as like this is a very young girl who is discovering her version of feminism. And like the more that she falls in love with this prince, the more she becomes concerned about like, if I decide to be with him, am I going to have to be royalty and therefore like lose the ability to do whatever I want? Because I'm 100% not willing to do that. Also, I'm not having babies. I'm just not going to do that. So like all of that is very refreshing and to read and feels like something Tamora Pierce would be like, yes, I appreciate this character. This is what my characters would be like if they were like 5 years older. So I think it's a good, you know, age bump up. So that's Graceling by Kristen Cashore.
Hard cosign. I absolutely love all of the books in that series. You should read all three of them, especially because they're all very different types of girls, which is just the best. Like there's not only one type of girl in this universe who gets to be a hero. There's other types, and that's really lovely. It's, you know, Tamara Pierce Rex are like comps are tricky. It feels tricky to me. I had a hard time nailing it down, but I'm going with Patricia McKillop. So that's an author, obviously, not a book. But I picked out her Riddle Master of Head series as the starting place that I think would work best for somebody who really wants more of the Tamara Pierce style medieval high fantasy. The first book is The Riddle Master of Head, H-E-D. And there is a dude main character in this, but like, bear with me because there's very important women in this series and then in her books as a whole. And it takes place in this like very medieval-y kind of world. And Morgan, the main character, has gone to like bard school where he learns a lot of riddles. And once upon a time, there was magic, but now that all magic is gone and nobody knows and all of that's left are these riddles. So he actually learns like all of the riddles and gets so good at it that he wins a contest with the ghost and like gets a crown and like doesn't know what to do with himself and has to go on this epic quest, fleeing, you know, these enemies, these supernatural enemies that are coming for him. And the girl that he has been betrothed to since forever, like very happily betrothed to, ends up playing a huge role in the series and is like an amazing character. And everybody in these books are like, they're my cinnamon rolls. Like they're my cinnamon roll characters. I love them so much. I'm so attached to them. And it just, the series just gets better and better. It's so like Ooh, it's so atmospheric. You really feel like you're in the world. And that's what I was thinking of when I was reading this question, was like, okay, if you want to like experience that sort of lived in high fantasy world that also has, you know, like different kinds of people and values that we value also, this feels like that kind of reading experience. And then she's written a ton of standalone books that also take place in very similar-ish worlds. And her book, The Forgotten Beasts of Eld, actually, I think, is a really solid comp for the second Graceling book, which is called Fire. So I think these all complement each other, is what I'm saying. So again, that is the Riddle Master series by Patricia MacKillop. And really, you should just read all of her stuff.
All right. Our next question is from Brooke, who says, I will be traveling throughout Oregon in 2020 and would love to prepare by reading some books that take place mostly in Oregon. I love all genres, so feel free to go wild. Okay. I went kind of wild there with this one. This book is a trip. I picked The Sisters Brothers by Patrick DeWitt, which comes with many trigger warnings, lots of violence. It's just super violent. It's a Western. There's also harm to a bunch of animals, especially a horse with like one really memorable scene that I'm never going to get out of my head, but it's fine. It's worth it. The book is amazing. This is about the Sisters Brothers, like two brothers whose last name is Sisters. So there's a dude named Herman who has like a hit put out on him by this very powerful, wealthy, like, gangster basically in the West called the Commodore. And the Commodore's two henchmen are Eli and Charlie Sisters. So he sends them out to like do his bidding. It opens in Oregon City. And so that's what they do. Like, they are assassins for hire. It's kind of like a Western with a humorous twist. Like, they're very self-aware, these two characters. And so they get this assignment to go find Herman Worm, because the Commodore has told them to do that. And on the way, they're traveling from Oregon City to where Worm lives in his gold mining claim, which is outside Sacramento. And Eli, one of the brothers, begins to be like, you know, I'm kind of tired of this life. Like, all we do is fight and get into trouble. And I would like to maybe have like a family one day and to not be shot at all the time. And I'm sleepy and I'm kind of tired of this. And so he's trying to convince his brother, Charlie, to settle down and maybe, you know, like, let's make this our last hurrah. We'll go and we'll complete this job and then we can go home back to our homestead and maybe try something new. And his brother's like not here for it. So they get into these like hilarious petty arguments along the way while they're also defending their lives from people who are like showing up to, you know, reap vengeance on them for past injustices and just like stuff like that. And so they're like very ne'er-do-well kind of characters. They do eventually make it to Herman Worm's claim, and what they find there helps them to understand why the hit has been put on this guy, but they're suddenly realizing like, oh, maybe this is not something that we want to execute. Maybe this job is not something we want to execute because of what they discover when they get to the claim. It does take place mostly in Oregon. There are also, of course, bits when they travel out of Oregon down to California to do the job. But it's just real funny. Like, their bouts of melancholy about their lives and their bouts of like questioning the ethics of what they're doing while they're in the middle of like murdering someone. It sounds like it shouldn't be funny, right? But it's hilarious. And you feel some feelings about it the whole time. Like, I should not be laughing at this, but that is so funny. If you like black humor, I think this is going to be 100% up your alley. Also, there's a movie, which I have not seen, but I've heard great things about. So that's The Sisters Brothers by Patrick DeWitt.
Cosine, just all of that. Everything that you just said, cosine. I picked The Lathe of Heaven by Ursula Le Guin because it takes place in a sort of alternate future Portland. And the scenery and landscape of Portland is absolutely a part of this book. Like, it's baked into its DNA in my memory of it, which is kind of cool. Like, Mount Hood is like very much a feature, but it's also, you know, sort of an urban sci-fi story. So it follows a man named George Orr who lives in like a version of our world that's not so unbelievable. Like, there's a lot of violence, environmental catastrophes, you know, there's a lot of poverty and drug use. And he is being increasingly convinced that his dreams can alter reality. But he's also like taking a lot of drugs to prevent himself from sleeping. So like, is he hallucinating? Can he actually change reality with his dreams? Like, how is this happening? And he ends up being ordered to go to therapy by, you know, this government bureaucrat woman who's amazing, by the way, becomes the main character. And so he has to go to therapy. And so he goes to this therapist who discovers that, like, nope, this guy actually can change reality with his dreams. And now this therapist who's, like, putting him under can suggest things to him. And, like, who will use their powers for good and who will use their powers not for good is a real question. And also, like, what does it mean to manipulate dreams? What is, like, the dream state like? How does it interact with the real world? Are there aliens? Like, there's so many different questions going on. And the book is very sort of surreal because of, obviously, the content. But it's such an interesting premise. And the characters are so beautifully drawn. And the scenery, like I said, it really does feel so tied to play in the way that George moves through his waking and unwaking life. And so, yeah, I just think that this would be a fun one to read before going to Portland in particular. So that is The Lathe of Heaven by Ursula Le Guin. Our next question is from Ada, who is 10 yes. years old. Is this our youngest
yes,
asker ever?
I think so.
Maybe. Yes. Love it. Who says, I really like books with lots of suspense and where you just can't stop turning page after page. Usually realistic fiction or mystery. For example, The Tale of Despero, The Marvelous Journey of Edward Tulane, Just Under the Clouds, and The Wild Robot. I would like more books like that. Amazing. Amanda, what do you have for Ada?
Okay, I picked Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky by Kwame Mumbalia, which I think you seem to really enjoy adventure stories. And this is such an adventure. It is from Rick Riordan's publishing imprint, which puts out just the most fun middle grade adventures. And this is about a seventh grader named Tristan, who, when the book opens, he's in a bit of a funk. Not a funk. He's depressed. He's having a hard time. His best friend has just died. They were in a bus accident and his best friend has died. His best friend named Eddie left him his journal. There's something weird about the journal, though. Like, it glows at night, which is questionable. And he's not opened it to read anything that's in it because, you know, it glows at night. And that makes him not want to touch it. And so he's got that. And he's dealing with his sadness about his friend dying. And so his family decides to send him to his grandparents' farm in Alabama for a month during the summer where he can, like, kind of get himself back together, maybe read the journal, try some writing, like, you know, try to feel better about what's going on. But the first night he's there, this, like, weird doll creature that leaks sap shows up in his bedroom and steals the journal. And Tristan goes off on this chase through the Alabama countryside, comes to a bottle tree, which is a tree that's hanging with, like, glass bottles that are designed to catch, like, you know, evil spirits. And in the process of trying to get the journal back from this weird creature, he punches a hole in the tree and they fall through this void into this, like, other world, this, like, mid-pass, they call it the mid-pass, which is a, you know, a place between our reality and this, like, place where magical, mystical, mythological creatures reside. And so he goes on this adventure of trying to get out of the mid-pass, get home, get the journal back. And while he's down there, he realizes that he has found himself in the middle of this battle between Black American gods like John Henry and Br'er Rabbit and some villains that live in the mid-pass. And so he gets involved in this adventure to try to kind of trick the god Anansi to seal that hole in the sky so he can get back home. So as you can tell, it is a story based on West African and Black American mythology. And he has such a, like, life-changing adventure full of all these, like, amazing characters. And it is, you said that you like mysteries. There is that mystery of, like, what is this journal and why is it glowing? And what does it have to do with the situation that Tristan finds himself in? So super, super fun. Really quick read. So that's Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky by Kwame Mbalia.
I also have a book that is, like, a contemporary adventure with magic and actually a little bit of science fiction. It's Dragons in a Bag by Zeta Elliott. Such a good title. First in a series. The second one is out. If you like it, there's more. And it is about a little boy named Jackson who his mother has to go to court. So she needs to find a babysitter and she leaves him with this, like, very cranky older woman that she calls Ma. And so he's like, is this my grandma? She's not. But what she is a witch. And she has some baby dragons in a little mint tin that she needs to get to a magical world because there's not enough magic left in our world for them to be safe. And so she's not happy about having, you know, this kid tagging along with her. He is not happy about this cranky old lady, but he's very curious and excited about the dragons because who wouldn't be?
Right.
And he ends up going on this adventure, which ends up including like time travel and dinosaurs. And, you know, they go to Prospect Park to get to a magical portal. And there's, you know, he's like, Jackson is really good at geography and science. And that ends up being important to the story. And it ends on a total cliffhanger, which is super fun. And there's just great characters. I definitely was like, what is going to happen next? I was definitely turning the pages. And I just loved it. The characters are so much fun. The story is so much fun. And I have not experienced that big of a cliffhanger in a chapter book before, which I think is really brave and interesting. And so I'm very excited to read the next one. So again, that is Dragons in a Bag by Zeta Elliott.
I'm never going to get over that title. That's such a good title.
It's so good. It's so good.
Dragons in a Bag. Like, I want that to be a band also. Okay, moving on. So our next question is from Anonymous, who says, I'm an asexual woman with a crush on my male best friend. Can you recommend a good friends to lovers read that is not all about sex? The characters do not need to be asexual, but I prefer more of a slow burn where sex is only at the end of it, if at all. Okay, I'm taking a bit of a risk with this one because my recommendation is a spoiler, like because of the way the question is worded, it's a spoiler. So if you are like very anti-spoiler, skip ahead. Okay, warning given. Here we go. So my recommendation is Tash Hart's Tolstoy by Catherine Ormsby, which does have a trigger warning for aphobia. And this is YA, and I love this book so much. So it is obviously about a girl named Tash, who is a vlogger, and she is making a modern adaptation on YouTube of Anna Karenina. She's like obsessed with Tolstoy, because who is it? You can tell why I love this so much, right? Like, I don't really have to continue. And she gets called out by another vlogger who has like millions of followers and finds herself going viral. And her web series is called Unhappy Families, where she's like, you know, she's a filmmaker remaking this story. And so she suddenly finds herself like thrust into this limelight. She's got like 40,000 new subscribers. So there's a lot of pressure, especially because it gets nominated for what they call in the book a golden tuba, which is like a YouTube award or whatever. And she realizes that she is going to, once she goes to the show to like, you know, go to this award show, she's going to meet Tom Kauser, who is another award nominee, another big YouTuber who she has been like flirting with, like having this like cyber flirtation with for a while. She's developed this huge crush on him and she wants to meet him at this award show and have it turn into something romantic between the two of them. I mean, it's already romantic, but like turn into something more substantial than a cyber flirtation. But she doesn't know how she's going to tell him that she is asexual or like how that's going to come up or like if it does come up, how do I say it? Like that whole thing. And so she wants to enjoy this like newfound fame that she has, but it's like further complicated by her friends having some kind of weird feelings about it. Also, her best friend's brother maybe has feelings for her. There's like a history there that unfolds before you as you're reading the book. He is a friend. So if you're remembering how the question was, you can kind of see where that's going. Right. So the thing with Tom maybe doesn't turn out. Anyway, I'm not going to keep talking because it's just more spoilers. It's so sweet. Like, it's just a really sweet and lovely. It's very, very slow burny because she has feelings for someone else from the jump. And I love this whole conceit of like a teenager being so obsessed with Tolstoy that they do a web series retelling it in a modern way. This is what I want. Why does this not exist in real life? Someone please go make it. So that is Tash Hart's Tolstoy by Catherine Ormsby.
Amanda has demands.
I request it strongly. Strong request from the internet.
Dear internet. I picked Let's Talk About Love by Claire Kahn, which is so good, y'all. It's just so good. I think it's technically new adult because Alice is in college. And the book opens with her girlfriend dumping her because she's asexual. And it's rough. Like, it's really rough because this girl just says all of the misguided, you know, aphobic things that you can imagine to Alice. And Alice is just wrecked. And this is not the first time this has happened to Alice. And so she's just like, I give up. Like, I am not going to date ever again. And she's still not technically out to even like her good friend. I mean, her good friends know, but she's not comfortable with the word asexual yet. Like, she knows what she is, but she doesn't like the words. She doesn't like the labels. And she really hates how people respond to her when they find out. So she's just like, I'm just not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to do anything about this anymore. Like, I'm done. And then she gets a summer job working at a library, and she meets her new coworker, whose name is Takumi, and he is gorgeous and like blows up her like cute meter, which she has, which is amazing. I love her cute meter. And she also experiences some feelings she's never experienced before, which is confusing and weird and stressful for her. And so she finds a good counselor and starts trying to figure out like, what do her feelings mean? What feelings like are just fleeting and more about physicality than about emotional things? And like trying to figure out like, can she put herself out there again? And they do develop this great friendship, and it's so much fun and it's so lovely. And also she's dealing with a bunch of other things. Her family want her to become a lawyer. She's super not interested in that. And so she's dealing with all of these parental expectations. She's also like a young Black queer woman who is interacting with the world in ways that are really hard. And she is also struggling because her two best friends, who she lives with now, are getting married, and she's feeling increasingly like a third wheel. So there's a lot going on in this book. And I really love how Khan digs into the emotional content surrounding just all of this. Like, it's not just about how do you deal with being asexual in a relationship? It's about, you know, the full 360 view of Alice's life, which is just the best. Like, it's the best. I love it. And I was just so like on the edge of my seat at the end of this book, like waiting to see how it was all going to turn out. It was very satisfying. So again, that's Let's Talk About Love by Claire Khan. And now it is time for another sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so question 5 is from Dana, who says, my boyfriend of 2 years recently graduated and was asked by the company he works for to move to another state. I'm stuck in one spot because I'm finishing my college degree and have decided to pursue my master's. I'm determined to believe that love prevails and that no matter what anyone says, I'm not naive for putting so much hope into what will be a long-distance relationship of several years. I'd love some recommendations for new adult books about long-distance relationships. They can be sweet or angsty. What matters to me is a relationship that feels passionate and true and a story that seems realistic, like something I could believe in for myself. Amanda, what you got?
Okay, I picked The Wedding Date by Jasmine Guillory, which is not new adult, but is not like, they're still pretty young. They're both pretty like new in their careers. So this is long distance. It's all in California, but California is a big state. So, you know, it is long distance. Alexa is the main character and Drew, meet in an elevator. They get stuck in an elevator together in a hotel. Drew is in town in Berkeley, I think it is where Alexa lives. Drew is in town for a wedding and Alexa is, lives there and is visiting her sister, in a hotel room. And Drew convinces her somehow. It makes sense when you read it because he's very charming. He convinces her somehow, this like stranger who he's never met before and is stuck in an elevator with, to be his date to a wedding. The wedding that he's going to is between his best friend and his ex-girlfriend. So he deeply wants to like have a date when he goes to this wedding for obvious reasons, because that's all super awkward. And she agrees because he's cute and he's a doctor and he's cute. Did I mention he's cute? So like, sure, why not? So she goes to this wedding. And it's very much like, I'm here. I'm going to do this thing with this guy who doesn't even live in my town. So it's going to be like a fun adventure. I'm never going to see him again. Except, of course, they have a really deep connection. They're both very attracted to each other. It's very, very steamy. The chemistry is very steamy. And they realize that like, this could be a thing, you know, like this could be a thing. So he has to go home. He's a pediatric surgeon and he lives in LA. So he flies back to LA and Alexa is she's in politics. She's like, I think she's the chief of staff for the mayor of Berkeley or something like that. So she's obviously like not going to go move, you know, to LA to be with this dude she doesn't know. So for the majority of the book, they are flying back and forth and it's long distance. The thing that I appreciated about their relationship, the long distance nature of it, is that she does talk about the cost. Like, there is a discussion about the real financial implications of having to fly back and forth, even when, you know, one of the members of the relationship, Drew, is pretty financially stable. He's a doctor. He's a surgeon. So, like, he's got money. But she refuses to, like, take his money. So she's flying on miles for a lot of it. They're both very busy. And as a graduate student, I'm sure you're going to be able to relate to this. They both have very high powered and demanding careers. So it's not just a question of financial cost. It's also time. Like, how do I make time when we both have these projects that we're working on and things that are pulling us in all these different directions? But this is like a relationship we really want to invest in. And because it's so new, they're both very like, oh, I don't know, but we're going to do it because like I want to bone that. So we're going to go ahead and yeah. yeah. And it's just real sweet. Like, I really like this book. So that's The Wedding Date by Jasmine Guillory.
I picked Play It Again by Aidan Wayne, which actually also has two asexual characters in it. So to our asker who wanted more of that, one of whom is sex repulsed and one of whom is not. And Play It Again is about David and Sam. Sam, get it? And they are both sort of YouTubers. David is blind and his channel is like basically restaurant reviews and also just things he's interested in talking about. But like, he's a foodie. He lives in Seattle. He is, you know, went viral years ago and has made a whole career out of having this very successful YouTube series. He lives with his sister, who's also his producer and camera person. And, you know, they have a really lovely relationship. And she's super into gaming. And she discovers this Irish gamer who does, you know, video game walkthroughs called Play It Again, Sam. And she like sends it to David just as like a, you should check this out. And he loves the video so much that he decides to talk about it on his YouTube channel. But this, you know, video gamer has like maybe like 400 followers kind of thing. And David has so many more. So he blows up this guy's channel. Like, suddenly, you know, all of these people are subscribing and checking it out. And he's like, oh, what did I do? So he sends him a DM being like, hey, sorry about that. Like, I'm not sure you wanted this, but now you have it. And like, hi. And they start to have this really lovely back and forth, you know, correspondence that then turns into phone calls. And it starts with, you know, David is very attracted to Sam's personality and his voice and all of these things. But also he like genuinely is like, oh, I kind of blew up this guy's spot. So like, let me offer help. Like, I know how to navigate this internet popularity world. Like, maybe he would like some pointers. And Sam, in the meantime, is like, I just kind of do this for fun, but like, you seem nice. Let's talk. Like, they're so sweet. And Sam is such an amazing character. Oh my gosh. Love him so much. And, like, this book made me wish that I could watch both of these characters' YouTube channels immediately. Like, I would need to see these things. And they do struggle with the long distance. Sam lives in Ireland. And then there's also, you know, Sam has some family stuff that he doesn't realize. So his self-esteem is kind of terrible. Like, he doesn't know why this amazing, you know, YouTube star is taking an interest in him. And, you know, is very like, ugh, like, am I worthy of attention? Are all of these people who are now, you know, watching and liking my videos, like, I don't understand why anybody likes me. And you're just like, oh gosh, sweetheart, like, you deserve better. And he gets better because this is a romance and everybody gets a happy ending. My one quibble with this story is that it gets like a little too into the nitty gritty of navigating YouTube and like taxes and like freelance income. And you're like, okay, like, that's fine. We don't need actually that much detail. So there are sections that I confess I skimmed a little bit because I just didn't care. But it doesn't, like, their relationship unfolds so beautifully. And the very specific ways that they deal with being in a long distance relationship, I was like, this is beautiful. Also, I would not have thought of that. So I feel like this might give you some ideas as to how to, like, you know, feel connected even when you're very far apart. And especially like if there's a time zone difference, like Seattle to Ireland is a pretty big time zone difference. So they talk about navigating that too. And there's all these really lovely moments of figuring out, you know, how to feel connected even when you're not physically in the same place. So again, that's Play It Again by Aidan Wayne.
It me. Okay, our next question is from Alexandra, who says, this year I want to get back into big fantasy and paranormal books. Last year I read mostly romance since I finished the Throne of Glass series in very quick succession and need a break. I've read and liked Percy Jackson, Red Queen, Three Dark Crowns, and The Vampire Academy. Mostly, I had some issues with the way it ended. I've also read the first four books of Outlander, but I found that's something I'd rather watch than read, along with Game of Thrones. I'll read just about anything. Okay, I picked Ruin of Kings by Jen Lyons, which has a trigger warning for torture. There's a lot of torture. It's like a surprising amount of torture. but I still enjoyed it, and I am very squeamish about that sort of thing, so I think you'll be okay. And this feels like a kind of old school fantasy. Like, there's dragons and demons and witches and shapeshifters and prophecies and like a chosen one. It's like the whole thing. But it never feels, you know, tropey or cliche. Like, it feels very fresh. So it's about a boy named Kieran who lives in kind of the poor section of this, you know, kingdom. He is an orphan who is raised by a single guy who, like, is, you know, is his dad. And he's raised to in the kind of a, I don't even know what, like a jolly criminal underworld, if that makes sense. Like, everyone's kind of kind-hearted, but they're also all going to pick your pocket. And this is how he's raised. And he's, like, very happy with that. But then he is claimed completely against his will through a series of unfortunate events as the long-lost son of a prince, a member of one of the high-ranking ruling families of this world. And there are several ruling families in this world, and like the whole political system is set up with them checking and balancing each other and fighting each other for supremacy. There's also an emperor who defends the realm against the demons as they, you know, kind of try to come into the world. And Kieran is like not having it. He doesn't want to be the long lost son of a treasonous dude because the family that he finds himself being claimed by is very cruel and abusive. Also, you know, being royalty in this universe is very restrictive. It also means that he's lost his family who he has grown up with. And as he gets more involved in what's going on, he realizes that there's like a conspiracy that he, and only he for some reason, because it's prophesied, that's why, can like do something about. So he very much comes out of the muck to save the world. It's that kind of story. And I'm like a sucker for that kind of thing. I love it. It's written in a series of flashbacks. Like when the book opens, he's in prison. And he's being guarded by this terrible shapeshifter who, when she kills, takes on the memories of everyone that she kills. So she like absorbs all the memories, and she has killed a lot of people he cares about. So when it opens, she is like giving him memories he doesn't want to hear. And like, that's how the psychological torture works. And so he is flashbacking to the beginning of the story and bringing you up to speed to how he got into jail with this like terrifying monster. There is a sequel that just came out last year, I think. It's really, really fast paced, despite being a big chunky beast of a book. And I think that you will like it. So that's The Ruin of Kings by Jen Lyons.
I picked Master of Restless Shadows by Jin Hale, which also comes with just all of the trigger warnings. There's abuse and cruelty. There's torture. There's prejudice. There's racism. There's self-harm. There's discussion of rape. Like, it's all, it's not a happy world. But you mentioned Game of Thrones and Outlander and some other stuff that gets like pretty real. So I feel like probably it'll be fine. And I, you know, I have a low tolerance for cruelty, and this, the way that this navigates it, I think is very conscious and is not trying to exploit it. Like, it's just like these characters have gone through a lot and are going through a lot, and it's not there to be, you know, I don't know, romanticized or sexualized or exploited in any way. It's just sort of their reality. So this is about, it's so interesting. This book, it is the first of a series, but it takes place in a world that has books that come before this. So you pick up here, I picked up here, this is the first book I've read by this author, but I'm dying to dive into the backlist because the world is so interesting. And some of these side characters who it becomes clear, like their stories have developed previous to now. Oh, it's so interesting. I really want to get in there. But the main character, Narsi, is like fresh out of, you know, medieval medical school, basically. And he is headed to the royal capital to, you know, be reunited with his mentor and fulfill this pledge and, you know, do like, you know, start his career and work for a royal person who needs a new doctor. And then the other character, Atreyu, which like, can we just have a moment for a character named Atreyu? is a writer, a very like louche reputation. He's a total rake. He's, you know, sleeps around. He writes scandalous poetry. You know, he has quite a reputation. And he is attached to the court of this duke that Narsi is coming to be the doctor for. But what nobody knows is that like underneath his, you know, rakey exterior, Atreyu is actually a spy master as well. And Narsi sort of finds himself in the middle of this very complicated religious / magical / political situation. Like, there's a missing fiance, and there's a power grab for the throne, and there's a secret cabal of, like, terrible, torturing, awful people who have bound other people magically to their will. And there's an assassin who's, like, can't control his own destiny, but is fighting in any ways that he can, but still, you know, doing terrible things for his unwilling master. Like, ugh, it's really complicated and weird. And you meet characters who you're like, who, how, what are you going to be doing in like 10 pages? Because nobody stays still in this book. Like, everybody is sort of moving around and showing new layers. And it's so interesting. And it's such a fascinating, diverse, like, lived in, feels really real, but also very fantastical world. It's really immersive. And I think, you know, a lot of the things that you mentioned, like, that's kind of the experience, is you're just like dumped into this fantasy world. And you're like, all right, here's the adventure. Like, what's going down? And yeah, I think it's really well done. I loved the romance between Narsi and Atreyu. There's also a secondary romance that I have even more feelings about, but it's like a major spoiler, so I will not say anything about it. And I loved the magic. Like, I loved the politics. I loved all of it. It's like a little creepy, spooky. It does get very violent, but again, totally redeems. It's totally worth it. So again, that's The Master of Restless Shadows by Jin Hale. And our last question is from Sybil, who says, I need recommendations by June 2020 if possible. I've decided to do the Pop Sugar Reading Challenge, and I'm struggling to find a book for the prompt, a book with a pun in the title. Here are my general criteria. No cozy mysteries, all caps. No male-female romance. Female-female or male-male is fine. Generally prefer nonfiction, lit fiction, contemporary fiction, historical fiction. Otherwise, just not the things I said. I'm just going to keep talking. So this was a fun one to do research for, and just for the record, I picked Here's Looking at Euclid, A Surprising Excursion Through the Astonishing World of Math by Alex Bellos. I just love that title so much. Like, come on.
Also, why are you making so many Casablanca references today?
Oh, you're right. I did not. Unintentional Casablanca references is my theme. Here you go. I'm not sorry. That's a great movie. Okay, side note. So Here's Looking at Euclid, as you might expect, is about math, but it's like fun, facty, interesting things about math. And the reviews for this book, my library hold didn't come in time for me to read any of it, but the reviews for this book are always like, I didn't know any of these things. It's so interesting. Also, this is hilarious. And I love the fact that Bellos is going around to, like, he goes to India to interview a sage, you know, who is talking about the mathematical insights in Buddhism. And he goes to Japan to talk to the father of Sudoku. And he talks to, like, you know, this female mathematician who, like, did this other thing. And then, you know, these two brothers who are obsessed with figuring out all of the decimals of pi. Like, all of these fascinating things. Oh, yeah, there's a math professor who knits different dimensions. Like, what? Come on now. It sounds amazing. I think it would be really fun for a reading challenge. And it does, in fact, have an excellent pun in the title. So again, that's Here's Looking at Euclid by Alex Bellos.
Okay, I picked The Pun Also Rises by John Polak. Oh, it's so good. So John Polak is a world pun champion, which is a thing. That's a thing.
I love that that's a thing.
I know, right? And he was also a speechwriter for Clinton the first, Bill Clinton. This is a history of the pun, and also kind of a thesis about how the pun itself is partially responsible for the development of written language, which is freaking fascinating. There are also some, like, personal anecdotes in here about, you know, being a pun champion. But for the most part, it is about how the pun changed spoken languages. And also, there's some really cool biological stuff in there about how, like, the brain processes language written and spoken, and how wordplay changes, like, what parts of the brain that you're using when you're reading or talking. And there's, like, evidence from pop culture. It examines the pun over history. But really, I think that, like, the idea that we started writing things down so we could make jokes at each other and, like, make groany dad jokes at each other specifically, I love it. I have a lot of like, okay, but in real life, we developed written language so we could like keep inventory of our grain stores. But I prefer this this version of history better because it's more fun. So I think, you know, if you like, this is one of those fun nonfiction books. It's like popular nonfiction that examines one really nerdy thing from a bunch of different fun angles. And that's one of my favorite kinds of like genres. So that's The Pun Also Rises. Let me give you the subtitle because it's really good. How the Humble Pun Revolutionized Language, Changed History, and Made Wordplay More Than Some Antics by John Paul.
Subtitles are a whole art form, they I really think. Are. So interesting.
We've done like posts about super long subtitles and how those came to be that are really fascinating.
Yes, yes. Okay, fodder for another day. Thank you all for listening. As always, we super appreciate it. We also super appreciate ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts or anywhere, but there in particular, because it helps other people to find this show. And we do love to see the feedback. Thank you to today's sponsors for making the show possible. Amanda, where can people find you on social in the meantime?
On Instagram at I'm Amanda Nelson.
And you can find me on Twitter as Jen IRL, that's Jen with two N's IRL, or on Instagram as I am Jen IRL. And we will talk to you next week.